Well, you guys, gosh, I can't believe it's been probably 30 years now when I studied abroad as an undergrad. I know, isn't that crazy? Where did time go? Right, 30? That was 20, 30, 40, 50. I mean, I'm almost 50, Rach. That is right. It's all right. I studied abroad in Western Ireland as a college student, and when I did that, my family came over to visit me for about a week, just like a good excuse to go to Ireland. And we spent just a couple of days in a little area south of Dublin called Killiney. And there was a beach there that was almost entirely made up of these like sort of flattish, rounded stones that were relatively large. And so they were really smooth. And at least at the time, it was a beach like I'd never seen before. It was really unique. And so my sisters and I collected a few of those rocks and we brought them home with us. And at one point, I even remember putting a gloss over mine, because, you know, like when rocks look wet, they like kind of pop a little bit and they're shiny. And then over the last 30 years, they've moved with me and they get stashed here and there. And then when I come across them, I remember that time together, right? It brings up memories of walking on the beach with my parents. I remember like pubs that we ate at. There's a little town called Dalkey I remember was my parents' favorite. Right, and so in that way, the rocks hold meaning that's like far weightier, right? It holds the memory or the worlds of memory that are special to me. And so maybe you can also think of something that you've held on to that carries memories like that. And so those stones came to my mind as I was contemplating this new sermon series, and I'll get to why that is. But we're starting this new series that we're going to marinate in here for the next few weeks for Lent, and we're calling it Treasures from the Wilderness. Now, wilderness represents a whole lot of things in scripture as well as literature, right? It's a really rich metaphor, and there are numerous stories that incorporate wilderness as a location or wilderness as a theme in the Bible. In fact, most of the major characters that are in scripture encounter desert or wilderness or wandering alone at some point. And so we're going to touch on several of these stories as we go through the weeks and then look at maybe if there's some wisdom we can mine for how that can apply for us today. So I think wilderness can speak to us really personally about a lot of things in our lives today. So let me just give a few examples of some things that we might describe as wilderness seasons in our life, or what I'm talking about here. So if you've ever gone through a season where you've been caregiving, like for young kids or maybe an aging loved one, you know that that's a season that can sometimes be really isolating or emotionally difficult. And it's particularly hard to take care of yourself in that space, right? Because you're so sort of focused on making sure that someone else's needs are met. And it's hard for people to really understand what you're going through unless they've also done it, right? So that can be a bit of a wilderness season. I think a midlife crisis can be a wilderness season when you're coming to terms with the life that you have, maybe compared with the life that you thought you might have or hoped that you might have. And for some people, that's not that big of a deal, but for others, that's a really difficult season. Sometimes grappling with a long illness, being unemployed or underemployed for a long period of time, having a long rough patch in your marriage or your relationship, a season of burnout at work, coming to terms with the effects of trauma or grief in your life, or even a spiritual crisis. Sometimes when people have been through that phase, which many of you I think have, where you've deconstructed a part of your faith, and then you're kind of like wondering that disconcerting time of like what's next or what's left, even especially if you had to leave a faith community that felt really meaningful to you. So in other words, wilderness is really just a way of describing difficult or transitional stretches of life, and we all have them, and we have many of them through our lives. Right, so wilderness seasons tend to strip away our false securities. Our resources feel fewer. The image of a wilderness is of a place without creature comforts, right? There's no Xbox out in the wilderness. There's no bodega or co-op we can run down to and grab a bottle of water and some snacks. It's a little bit more, the picture is like hiking up in the UP, right? It's a place where there's very few distractions and we can be honest with ourselves and with God. And so Christian mystics often describe wilderness seasons as an invitation from the divine. Right? The wilderness is a place where God becomes enough. It's the landscape where God teaches us what we're not able to learn when we're maybe extra comfortable. Right? So the invitation is to mature. And there's a story in the book of Joshua about a people who are emerging from a really long wilderness season. They've been in a wilderness, a literal wilderness, for 40 years. They've been wandering around the deserts of the Arabian Peninsula and in parts of today what we would call the country of Jordan. And so at the end of their wandering, they come to a river, which is also called Jordan, the Jordan River. And they reach this river at its flood stage, and it seemed like they wouldn't be able to cross it. Right? And this was upsetting because they wanted to finally escape the desert after so many decades of wandering in circles and meandering out in the sand. And they were tired, and they'd lived on so little for so long, and they'd buried an entire generation of loved ones out there. And they longed for rest and for stability for their children and their grandchildren, and they longed for abundance. And I think that's sometimes how it feels, doesn't it? That like right when you think you're finally done wandering, like when it finally seems like a season is sort of lifting or you're getting a little reprieve, another barrier to rest appears. And you're like, oh, will this ever be over? Like, what is next, Lord? Right? The psalmist is like, how long, oh Lord, how long? And that's where the people were at in the book of Joshua as they faced this flooded riverbed. So they camped for a couple of days. And then they realized they were going to need God to get them through this latest obstacle. They were like, we just really can't do this without God. They'd learned enough out in the wilderness to recognize that this was in God's hands. Right? There was nothing they could do to control it. And there's a discernment process in that, right? Is this something that I can actually do something about? Or is this just something where it's just you, God? And so we're told in the story, God went before them and God went with them. And the waters of the Jordan River stopped flowing and the people passed through on dry ground and they were finally out of the wilderness. So let's read this together. This is from Joshua 3:13. Joshua said, this is Joshua the leader speaking. I don't know if it made it. We were having copy machine issues, so we may have pared down on the, or I might have forgotten to put it in. We'll see. I'll just read it to you. Diane's telling me it was me. It's me again, guys. It's been a week. When the soles of the feet of the priests who bear the ark of the Lord of all the earth, come to rest in the waters of the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan flowing from above shall be cut off, and they'll stand in a giant heap. That's a picture. And when the people set out from their tents to cross over the Jordan, the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant were in front of the people. And now the Jordan overflows all of its banks throughout the time of harvest. So when those who bore the Ark had come to the Jordan and the feet of the priests bearing the Ark were dipped into the edge of the water, the waters flowing from above stood still, rising up in a single heap far off at Adam. Right? So the priests, the picture here is the priests who are bearing the Ark of the Covenant, which is symbolically the presence of God, right? These are just people, they're bearing the presence of God out into the river, and the river stops flowing so that people could cross, right? It seems like a really weird story. And there's actually quite a lot that's going on here symbolically. And there's two things that I want to pull from this. So the first one is that we have an echo of an earlier story, don't we? You guys think of another story where the waters parted and the people walked through on dry ground? Yeah, we know Moses and the Red Sea, Prince of Egypt, Ten Commandments. Right, so this is a story, it's indicating to us, it's a story about memory. Right, it's a story about remembering how God had rescued them before, and so we'll do it again. Like, Lord, you did it back then, please come through for us again. There's a second layer of symbolism here as well. So the Jordan River is sometimes read as a symbol of death, or sometimes as like a barrier between life and death, and partly because of this story, right? It's the line between the wilderness of barrenness and death, and then the farmable, livable land that's bringing life, right? So we have the waters of death being rolled back and held up in a giant heap, rolled all the way back to a town called Adam. Where have we heard that name? Adam. Adam in the Hebrew, right? Just means the human. Adam from the creation myth stories, the symbolic first human, the waters of death had been rolled all the way back to Adam so that the people could cross over. Right, so this wilderness journey has been so arduous. It has been so completely life-sucking. It has taken so much from them. And now they have this hope, right? And this hope that they have is so exhilarating that it feels as though death itself is being rolled away for all of humankind, right? The dry spell is coming to a close. The new chapter can begin. The green and life-giving land is just ahead on the other side. They're about to enter a new season. The times of death are being held back. The time of life is before us. And we could all use a little hope like that. And the man leading the people across this river, his name is called Joshua, which means salvation. In Hebrew, the name is Yeshua. In Greek, it's actually not in the Greek. The English translation of the Greek we know is Jesus, right? These are the same name, Joshua, Jesus. And so the New Testament writers are picking up on this symbolism when they're writing, right? That Jesus' path is also the salvation that rolls back death for all of humankind. It's why Jesus was baptized in the Jordan River. It's another sermon. Maybe we'll do that Palm Sunday. We'll see. But I thought I'll throw that in there for those of you for whom that's interesting. What I want us to see today is that the way the story is being told is meant to convey just how much relief the people feel from exiting the wilderness. Right, salvation has come. And the story communicates how important the memory of God's help was for them in reaching this better place. Right? They remembered that God had helped them before, which gave them the faith to face this latest challenge. If God, you did this in the Red Sea, you can come through for us again. We remember who you are. And there's a song that we sing like that sometimes here on Sunday morning. Right? The bridge says, I've seen you move. You move the mountains. And I believe I'll see you do it again. It's hard to read without singing it. You made a way, right? Where there was no way. And I believe I'll see you do it again. Okay, I'll just sing it, guys. Come on, right? The song, it's capturing the essence of stories like this one, right? How important remembering God's faithfulness is for our own strength as we face hardships. That's a spiritual resilience tool. When at last the people got to the other side of the river, God tells them to choose 12 men, one from each of the tribes, and he tells them to go and pick out a stone from the middle of the riverbed. All right, so they're to pick up these stones from the dry ground where they had just crossed, and roll them out and place them at a place called Gilgal, right, to make a monument of sorts, if you like. If you've ever seen like those stacks of stones that people will put on top of each other when they're out hiking, I think those are called cairns. They'll kind of be sort of signposts, or they're for trail marking when you set those up. Sometimes people do them out in the middle of Riverside, in Riverside Park, in the middle of the Huron River. You'll see these cairns set up. In Tibet, they had those piles of stones. They called them Mani stones. So Gilgal, this place where they were to make their monument, that means rolling, right? It's the place of the rolled stones. It's the place that marked the escape from wilderness and death and oppression and slavery that they'd known in Egypt. But before the people could settle down into their new lives, before they were building their houses, before they could plant their various vineyards, before they could resume a steady life, God said, pick up stones. Pick up stones. Why? It's because the wilderness produces a treasure that must not be lost. And that treasure is memory. This is the place where they remember together what they've been through. This is the place where they remember God's faithfulness to them. We remember that these stones were taken from the riverbed, right? They're taken from the place that had been impassable the day before. Go into that place that had served as an obstacle and pick up the stones from there and take that obstacle and turn it into a cairn, turn it into a signpost of God's care for you. Right, it's a reframing of their story. This could have been an obstacle, but instead, it became a sign of God's grace. It became a sign of God's care for you. It became a sign of God's faithfulness. And you might wonder, was this memorial real? Like, did this actually happen? And I would say it's a little unclear, actually. There's a man who's known to history as the Pilgrim of Bordeaux, who wrote about a monument made of 12 large stones in that region around the year 300. And so we have his writings in Latin. And then there's a little 6th century Byzantine church in nearby Jordan just across the river. And it's got a floor mosaic where there's a map that shows the stones of Gilgal and that monument on a map of the regions. And so some people believe the stones are known and that they've been hidden beneath some of the churches in the area for safekeeping in a volatile region. Who knows? But whether they're real or whether they're not real, the story is meant to remind us of the importance of remembering, and they're still helping us remember who God is. And then Joshua, their leader, says, when your children ask, what do these stones mean? You shall tell them, ... What do these stones mean? You shall tell them. The memories are meant to be shared, and they're meant to be passed down as tools of resilience, right? These aren't just for the adults who already know the story. These aren't just for the people who maybe lived it or lived parts of it. These aren't for the people who are trying to just get together and tell their stories. These are for the children who are going to grow up in the houses that they didn't build, eating from the orchards they didn't plant, practicing a faith they haven't needed to desperately cling to for survival. Right? So the danger for the next generations in this story isn't the persecution and the slavery and the oppression that it was for their grandparents and their great-grandparents in Egypt who lived through that stuff. The danger, the story tells us, is getting comfortable. It's getting comfortable without the collective memories of what hardship is like and without having passed down the tools of resilience for the next generations who will most certainly at some point face some hardship. It's like, so when they ask you, you tell them. The church remembers these tools in Lent. It's when the global church enters a kind of wilderness on purpose. Right? We simplify. Traditionally, Christians tend to practice some form of fasting during Lent. So if you grew up Catholic, or maybe you're still Catholic, you might fast from meat on Fridays. I think I'm going to join the Catholics in that for this Lent. Although I already failed my first Friday. We had an Italian sub, but Friday's going forward, right? Some people fast from things like chocolate or a little bit of social media. I would just encourage you, though, pastorally, if you choose to fast from something, do not go crazy about it. You do not need to, like, be the most pious. Eating disorders are so common in our culture that I almost never talk about fasting or encourage it. But I think that if you want to do something really small and doable, that can be really appropriate in Lent. During Lent, we examine our hearts. We get honest with God. We try to carve out just a little bit more time for the presence of God, even if it's a minute or two. And we start out Lent by confronting our mortality on Ash Wednesday, which some of us did at lunchtime this past Wednesday. And we do that because forgetting is easy. Right? It's easy to forget that we are mortals with limits, that we're creatures, that we depend on others and we depend on God, and that we can't actually do everything on our own. And we forget who we are in God and whose we are. And we forget who carried us in our lowest moments. And sometimes we forget how it is that we survived and what tools that we needed to do that. But we've all walked through wilderness seasons, right? And in these moments, sometimes it feels unbearable. Like maybe you're in one right now and you're just like, I don't even know how I'm going to get through this. And yet here we are, right? Here we stand. We make it through. Here you are. And so Lent is an invitation to pick up a stone, or two, or 10, and remember God's faithfulness to you in the wilderness, and to remember how friends and how loved ones came through for you, and to remember the practices of resilience that have seen you through, and sometimes to remember even the things that weren't so helpful to you, so that you can glean some wisdom from those mistakes. I'll never forget, my wife Rachel said, resilience is not making things worse when they're already bad. Does that seem fair? Ish, you know. Not making things worse when they're already bad. In other words, if you're going through a real rough time, maybe don't max out the credit card on sports betting. Like, it's just, don't add that to your own woes, right? So I invited you to pick up a rock when you came in this morning. See, I've got mine here. If you didn't get one, they're on the back donut table, and you can pick one up before communion if you'd like. What I want to ask us to do for this meditation time is just spend a minute or two thinking about something you want to remember this season. It can be a way that God came through for you, like a moment of God's faithfulness to you. It can be the way a friend or even a hobby helped you through a really rough patch of life, whatever it is that's meaningful for you. And then when we come up, I bought two little golden bowls that are on the end of the table next to the candles here. And after you take communion, I invite you to just stick these rocks in those bowls. If you're not taking communion, that's okay. You can put them in. You can put them in at the end of the service. Zoomies, I was going to tell you that if you'd like to participate in this, you can just think of something that you'd like to remember and just email me or email Daniel and tell us that you'd like a rock placed in one of these bowls in your name, and that we'll make sure that we do that, because I'm going to put these bowls out every week all through Lent. And what we're going to do is they are going to hold the memories that we have together, our collective memories of resilience, like those stones at Killarney, Ireland, right? Those things hold memory of people, just like the stones of Gilgal. And so these stones are going to hold worlds of collective memories for us. And they are going to serve as a treasure for us in this time so that we remember that collectively we have all kinds of tools that can get us through really hard seasons. Does that make sense? Just drop it in there. If you're like, I really need to think about it, take your rock home, put it in next week. I'll keep the rocks out, so if there's other things, like if you have other things that you're like, I really want to add this, you can add to it all through Lent, and that would be beautiful as well. I'll buy some more rocks. All right, let me just give us a minute or two to come up with our thing that we would like to remember. Lord, I just want to say thank you for your faithfulness to us. Thank you for all of the tools that you've put in our tool belt that help see us through hard times. Thank you for the people who have showed up for us. Thank you for the communities that have showed up for us. Thank you for the different practices that you've given us. And Lord, we just ask that you would help us to remember those over these next 6 weeks, that you can remind us who we are, we can remind us of who you are, and of your faithfulness to us.